Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. In 1996, Secretary of State Elaine F. Marshall became the first woman ever elected to a statewide executive branch office in North Carolina. And in the 22 years that have followed, Marshall has established herself as a recognized national leader on a host of subjects, from charities to lobbyist regulation to sports agents. Recently, Secretary Marshall has spoken out on a couple of high-profile issues, the debate over the 6 constitutional amendments that will appear on the fall ballot, and how to make sure your charitable donations for hurricane relief go to legitimate charities. She was kind enough to join us in studio this week to share her views on both of these issues. Well, Secretary Marshall, thank you so much for being with us on News and Views. Welcome to the show.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you for this.
So 22 years now as Secretary of State. You getting a feel for the job yet?
I think I have, yeah. Develop a little routine.
So, my goodness, you have so many often widely varying issues that you have to have expertise on as Secretary of State. One issue that's been very much in the news of late, of course, is the constitutional amendments. We have this slate of 6 constitutional amendments that are on the fall ballot. You've been right in the middle of the whole debate over what they should say on the ballot, how people should understand them. Can you give us sort of your overall take on where this stands right now?
Thank you for bringing this topic up to the listeners. Indeed, the Secretary of State has a variety of sometimes disparate responsibilities that do require a great deal of knowledge in a lot of areas. One of the responsibilities since 1983 has been an assignment by the General Assembly to basically interpret any potential constitutional amendments to the public in clear, easy, understandable language. Now, that is a very complex job. It's complex because what the people will see on the ballot is not what this commission has written. What this commission has written will be available at boards of elections. It's into the judicial voter guide. It's available to the media, and I believe they will have been and will be doing stories on these. It is an easy way to explain to people what they mean. I say easy for a lawyer. Part of it is what the language says, part of it is what it doesn't say, and part of it is how does it fit in with existing constitutional or statutory laws. I think first and foremost we need to emphasize the fact that amending the Constitution has rarely been done by the citizens of North Carolina. I've been here 21 years, 22 years now, and have only done 7 amendments across that time. Now we have almost an equal number. We have 6 on the ballot this time. It is certainly a change in posture, really, for the state of North Carolina to be considering so many amendments. Second, amending the Constitution is kind of like a super law. It's not the same thing as what the General Assembly does when they come to town every year, several times a year. Those things can be changed by later General Assemblies. I think people need to realize the pendulum swings both ways eventually. The party that is in charge now may not always be in charge, and folks need to keep that in mind. If it's a constitutional provision, it can only be changed by another vote of the people. It's put in there by the people, and it can only be changed or taken out by the people. That is an incredibly high threshold. It's an important threshold, but it's a very high threshold. We have heretofore only put in the Constitution big policy ideas and then allowed statutes to flesh them out. Here we have some what I might call micromanagement,
very specific constitutional
amendments. There are some that deal with the core operation of how we govern ourselves. And I can't stress that enough. There will be a sea change in how things happen with regard to the way North Carolina will operate. It's a matter of who's in charge. And I think people need to realize that, you know, everyone who's an eligible voter gets a chance to vote for the governor. Not everyone gets to vote for the leaders of the General Assembly. That's another important point that I think people need.
Transfer power from the governor to the leaders of the General Assembly. People might take that into account.
Right. I mean, it's like you've lost your right to vote for the person who's going to be making these decisions. And in the case of the judicial amendment, the Constitution says that the citizens get to elect judges. Whether that's a right thing or a wrong thing, I'm not here to espouse, because that debate's been going on for a long time. But there are provisions in the ones about the judiciary that would deny citizens the right to vote after an appointment is made for a long period out there. Some would say it could be an end run around the people's right to vote, because when you poll on do you want to vote for your elected officials and do you want to vote for elected judges, people overwhelmingly say yes.
One of the things that's been so striking about these amendments and the whole process is the fact that they're not numbered. They don't have a title. You don't see a campaign that says yes on three or no on four, because they literally just appear as sort of one giant blob at the bottom of the ballot. I know you've been trying to explain them to
that
people.
That right to identify them, number them, list them, or caption them was controlled by the General Assembly.
Right, I understand.
At one point, they made a change in the statute that creates the commission and said that we would do the caption that appears on the ballot.
Right.
Then they came back to town in one of those hastily called sessions and took that right away from the commission. So now it's a very bland, if you will, caption of constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
And it's referred to by the bill number, but that's meaningless to a lot of people. It doesn't really say. Now, if you go to the explanation on sosnc.gov, you will see that it talks about its judicial appointment. It's about ethics and elections. It's about the right to hunt and fish, voting rights, tax. You know, it gives you an idea what the topics are. And then the explanation attempts to put in plain, simple language what the effect is or could be.
You know, in some states, there is the independent commission that's similar to this Constitutional Amendments Publications Commission that you've been leading. In some states, that there is an independent commission that really sort of has a say-so as to whether this amendment's going to appear, how it should appear. To me, that sort of makes sense, to have some sort of an independent body to take on that role and not leave it entirely up to 3/5 of the General Assembly that's drawing up the amendment.
Well, I do think it would be a logical path, because as we saw this time, there were political accusations being made against the commission, claims of bias. And my response to that has been that telling the accurate picture about these amendments is not misleading or full of bias or political. But I certainly would think an independent commission of individuals that are talented at writing and legal scholars would get rid of the hyperbole and the emotion and do it in a very accurate way. I would support that.
I don't want to ask you to comment on the specifics of any of the amendments, but it's been striking as a sort of add-on to your point that this has been such a confusing process. And recently we've had at least two of the Republican senators who voted to put the amendments on the ballot have now actually come out against at least the one amendment, the Judicial Appointments Amendment, which just sort of, to me, makes a remarkable statement about how confusing this whole and what a way to run a railroad.
Exactly. These amendments were conceived behind closed doors. There was limited debate on these. There was absolutely very limited time. They only came up in the last 2 weeks of the general session when, as anybody who's a legislative watcher knows, it's known as the silly season, or the fur begins to fly. At that point, the craziness abounds. And folks were dealing with a lot of other issues and didn't really have much time to concentrate on these. There weren't hearings where constitutional scholars came in and talked about these. So that's why the weight upon the commission that I chair has been even heavier, because we pointed out some things that some people didn't realize were true. Legislative staff agreed with my position and the Attorney General's position that these were true. The General Assembly did come back after we started, and of course the lawsuit was going on because the courts decided that two of them were deceptively misleading, which was the point that we were making without saying those words, but that there were a lot of potholes in these. And so they came back and did a change. I mean, this was all done, compared to prior years, it's all done in a flash of lightning.
It's remarkable to think that we literally rewrote a couple of the constitutional amendments literally just a couple of weeks before absentee ballots went out.
Yep.
It's a remarkable situation.
Yep.
I do want to turn in our limited time to one other topic that you have some important responsibility with respect to, and that's the aftermath of the hurricanes that have been affecting North Carolina, Florence, and as we record this, Michael. One of the issues that comes up repeatedly when we have disasters like this is the issue of charitable donations and how can people be assured that they're sending money and contributions in the right place? And we know that you oversee a lot of that in your role as Secretary of State. Do you have any thoughts or advice for people?
I have plenty of advice on this.
Please.
I mean, people's emotions, their heartstrings, whether it's people, whether it's animals, whether it's seeing floods, whether it's thinking about the economic deprivation and the housing damage, you know, we have a good inner self. North Carolinians are very generous. But it's my hope that we will be wise with that generosity. A lot of these charities are registered with the Secretary of State's office, and you can go to, again, sosnc.gov and go to charities, and you will see those that are registered with us. You will be able to see in the past how much went to the good works of the charity versus administration. I think it's important that a high percentage goes. Doesn't have to be 100%. They're
right.
entitled to have workers that are paid,
right.
but a good percentage. People need to understand when they give that organizations have to have a strong infrastructure to be able to deliver the services that are needed. We worry about sound-alike charities. We worry about websites that are put up that will pop up when you do some things. Our recommendation is never to click through on one of those. Write down the name of who they are, then go Google to make sure you're getting to that organization's real site. Another tip is to not give your credit card number to one of those pop-up things. Do not give your credit card number over the phone to make a contribution. Now, it's okay to do an electronic internet, but make sure that you have Googled it yourself. And that you know that that is the actual charity, because the sound-alike business is pretty active right now. The other thing that's difficult is the GoFundMe pages.
Yeah.
Organizations, this goes back to whether or not they've got the right infrastructure to deliver. Then we have the GoFundMe pages that are for individual people. There was a lady, a teacher in Durham.
Gotten some attention,
yeah, $30,000 worth of damage, and she's raised a few $1,000 over GoFundMe. You really ought to have an ability to check out whether this is a valid cause. You know, there are a lot of do-gooders that want to put up something for somebody else, for another cause. And we saw the case of that famous case out of Pennsylvania where $400,000 and the person who was supposed to get it only got a very small amount of it. I'm a big charity supporter, but I want to be a smart charity supporter. So these are some tips that people can use in order to figure out. I don't want to discourage anybody. And when it's an international disaster, and we're seeing more and more of those, my typical recommendation to people is give to a local group that you know is capable of providing that relief over there. The Baptist Men of the World, I'm a Methodist. I give to Methodist World Relief. Organizations that you know that have the capacity to go do that. And as I say, that you can jerk a knot in somebody's neck that's local if you think something's going wrong. You can raise a stink and, you know, maybe get some changes.
Well, we really appreciate all the knots you jerk in those people on all of our behalf and all the fine work you do for our state. Thank you so much for your leadership and for providing this very helpful information today. And hope we can do this again soon.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next, a veteran education leader discusses the challenges that will confront our public schools as they struggle to recover from Hurricane Florence.